The path to a greater reliance on fuel-saving, gridlock-easing mass transportation is a long road indeed, one fraught with political potholes that can and have gobbled up any number of mass transit proposals over the past decade. The issue, it seems, is that a whole lot of lawmakers just can't stomach the T-word. Not transportation, but taxes. And those lawmakers know it would be tough, if not impossible, to expand the former without boosting the latter. Hi, I'm John Schwantes, and I encourage you to sit back and buckle up as we ask an expert panel for directions on the future of mass transit in our state. All that and more on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
What happens when bright ideas meet world-class infrastructure?
You can discover new ways to treat cancer.
Understand our planet.
Understand our galaxy.
To learn more, visit PurdueResearchPark.com.
You know the old saying, you can't get there from here? Well, mass transit advocates are probably starting to wonder whether that maxim applies to their decades-long push for more bus and rail service in Indiana's biggest cities. Back in 2010, they floated a 25-year, $2.4 billion plan to raise sales taxes to pay for an expansion of bus and rail service across Indianapolis's 8-county metro area. That idea went nowhere. This year, with the support of key mayors in the region, the Central Indiana Transit Task Force returned to the General Assembly with a 10-year, $1.3 billion plan that would let residents of two counties, Marion and Hamilton, decide whether they wanted their income taxes to go up by 0.3% in order to double Indianapolis's Indigo bus service and add train service from Noblesville to downtown Indianapolis. Again, though, the result was a dead end. So where do we go from here? Joining me to talk about mass transit are Republican Senator Jim Merritt of Indianapolis, the Senate's Majority Caucus Chair and the ranking member of the Senate's Transportation Committee, and outside the General Assembly, he's Vice President of Corporate Affairs for the Indiana Railroad Company. Democratic Representative Terry Austin of Anderson, former co-chair of the General Assembly's Joint Study Committee on Mass Transit and Transportation Alternatives, and Vice Chair of the Transportation Committee of the National Conference of State Legislatures. Hamilton County Commissioner Christine Altman, Chair of the Central Indiana Regional Transportation Authority, and Mike Bieberstein, Director of Public Policy at the Greater Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce, and the Mike behind Go Mike Go, a week-long initiative last summer in which he rode the city's Indigo bus system to focus attention on the value of public transportation. And I thank you all for being here for what is a record-long introduction, I think, this session. Well, let's start with the bill that, as we said, didn't go anywhere. And I'll start with you, Jim Merritt. The conventional wisdom, or at least the stated reason, is that it got tied up in the very controversial debate over right-to-work legislation and failed to get the votes it needed to come out of Ways and Means Committee. But I think we would probably all stipulate there's more to it than just getting caught up in another piece of, in the crossfire dealing with another piece of legislation. Why do you think it didn't materialize this year?
Well, first of all, I don't think we've had the time to make sure that the populace, the constituency, has all the information. And I think this is kind of a work in progress. And people tend to forget that, you know, for the last couple of short sessions, we've had a lot to do, and we've accomplished a lot. And these sorts of issues sometimes take time. And there are a lot of big issues through the years. Right to Work's one. It really took two sessions or more, and it's an education process. And the price of gas is starting to inch up a little bit, so there will be a lot more interest in ridership with the buses. And it's one of those things where the legislature just has to get comfortable with it and understanding exactly what is in the program. And I think the more legislators have town hall meetings, third house meetings this summer, this will be more of a information time, and they'll come back next year with more of a handle on what the issue is, and the plan, I think, will start to be honed, it's cooking a great meal. It just takes time.
Now, you mentioned higher gas prices, the prospect of higher prices. I think we
the
all
prospect
saw some,
it's happening.
We all saw some headlines this week in Indianapolis and elsewhere about projections of $4 a gallon, maybe even $5 a gallon in some parts of the country. So you're saying to get this bill going, you advocate higher fuel prices. No, okay. I always like to see if we can make a few headlines here.
Well, I do believe that if you look at the bus lines downtown when people are going home, and the price of gas goes up, those lines, people start riding the bus system. They get more crowded. And, you know, obviously we're hopeful that we can become a little more independent in this country. But the bottom line is I think this project is something that people just have to get comfortable with. It's a cultural thing. People like their cars and they like their independence. And who knows if it ever becomes, you know, fact and reality. But when you talk to constituents, and I talk to a lot of them, people still like their cars. But outside forces and education could play a role in this.
Terry Austin, what's your take on why this didn't happen this session? Is it simply a matter that people aren't comfortable with it, or is it perhaps the T word, you know, taxes? It's going to involve, even if they are self-imposed. Effectively self-imposed taxes, it's still a tax, and some lawmakers simply are not going to go for that. Is it that? Is it this other notion that it just needs to cook a while, simmer a little bit longer?
Well, I think it's a combination of factors. As you know, we've actually passed a bill out of the House at least two or three times, and usually by an overwhelming majority, where it just seemed to hit a brick wall in the Senate. However, labor issues aside, whether that did or did not tie it up, I think there were actually at least three big things that stuck out in my mind. First of all, it really wasn't enough of what I would say is a bipartisan effort this year. You had a single legislator on the bill until very late in the session from Wells County, small rural, and with all due respect to Jeff Espick, who, you know, I have a great deal of affection for. He knows that budget. He understands this issue. He even voted for a mass transit bill once. I'll never forget because I was blown away by it. I think the fact that, you know, you had Representative Espick carrying that bill when he really had no vested interest in it. The question was posed to me, why in the world didn't we have some Marion County legislators on this bill? Or Hamilton County legislators? There's certainly no shortage of them. And I think this is an opportunity for the Central Indiana Transit Task Force and their leaders to pull some people together. Let's make it a broader effort than it has appeared to be over the course of the last couple of years and say, what can we learn from this? The governor said, if I recall correctly, that he thought they failed to make their case to the legislature, to the General Assembly. There may be an element of truth in that, but I also know that having been in the General Assembly now for 10 years, you have to give legislators a reason to vote for something. And whether the tax issue and sort of the cloud that seems to be developing among some legislators of, you know, I took the Grover Norquist pledge of no new taxes, and he certainly took the opportunity to weigh in on this particular issue with a letter to the governor.
And some people are saying that effectively killed this legislation.
I don't think Indiana lawmakers want some guy out of Washington trying to tell them how to vote or not vote. We don't appreciate those kind of tactics. But some folks are concerned about how it's going to be perceived on their record, I believe, at least is what they shared with me. And this is not an era where they are fond of raising new revenue. I mean, look at what we've done across the board. We've capped property taxes. We've cut funding in so many essential areas. Why in the world would they do an about face and vote for something like this, even though it's enabling legislation?
I want to get Christina Mike in here, I promise, but let me respond to this notion. Mm-hmm. Why didn't more legislators, including Republicans from the metropolitan area, step forward when it might have mattered?
Well, I can, first of all, the ideas haven't really sunk in, the tax increases that come with this, and most folks didn't understand, I think, that it was a referendum, and there is a... It's like allowing a sales tax at the local level. The legislature doesn't give these responsibilities away. And one, the issue that I've talked with Mike about at length is a third of the program is paid for by the federal government, when we know the federal government has to undergo a complete transformation of spending. And it may, that third may not be there.
All right, I promised I'd pull you guys in.
Sure.
Let's do it now. This must be frustrating when you hear members of the General Assembly say, you know, we're just not ready. It hasn't reached the, you know, ready to come out of the oven. That's paraphrasing a bit there with the cooking metaphor. You know, maybe there wasn't bipartisan support, and yet the plan, if I understand, was probably 3 years in the making, and I believe the task force made it a point, cognizant of the notion that you needed to have local support lined up, Mayor Ballard, Mayor Brainerd, and as I recall, we're there with you in December at the fairgrounds to sort of kick this off and launch it. Do you think there was not enough groundwork laid, or do you think other things are at work here?
Well, right now we're in a difficult period tax-wise and economy-wise. There was concern expressed. We did an after-action. We're in the process of an after-action talking with legislators. And their concern were costs and is it affordable? And we've heard a lot of that. Is it a good plan? And I just point out that this plan has been vetted in probably the worst economy since the Great Depression. And in fact, it was reworked because of the drop in revenue. And I feel extremely comfortable, and I'm a very conservative person, that the numbers that were produced were sufficient in this economy, and knowing tax revenue as I do at the local level, that we're at the lowest point Hamilton County has been in years on county option income tax, which is the support of this program. And if anything...
And there the rate would have gone from 1.0 to 1.3.
Correct.
And in Marion County, 1.6 to 1.9.
Correct.
So that's
so basically, Hamilton County alone in this economy would raise $24 million in a year.
And you think it would have, had it gone to a referendum in November as you had sought, you feel confident that it would have prevailed?
I don't feel confident. I felt very comfortable that we would have an opportunity to talk with our residents and ask them to think about what they want their community to look like long term. And this really is the issue, is the local ability to craft your community in a manner that you think is appropriate for you, your children, and your parents. And to give opportunities for jobs to them and other people that service you in hospitals and malls and everything else. Right now, the course we are on is not sustainable from even a local government standpoint to maintain and build capacity in one mode of transportation.
And Mike Bieberstein, I know this has been near and dear to your heart.
Sure.
I mean, you rode the bus for a week from Broad Ripple downtown into meetings. Was that a wasted effort, or was that...
No, I don't think so at all. I think it's started a conversation that's allowing us to continually move on. Having a hearing this year and really kind of starting to vet this with legislators was a huge step, in my opinion, to getting to the final product of actually getting something passed.
And for you in the chamber, and if you look at the people who are behind this on the task force, it's realtors, it's a who's who, really, of powerful organizations. Yeah. It's an economic, Christine just touched on this, but for you, it's as a chamber representative, this is an economic issue.
Sure. The chamber initially got involved because it's about workforce development and getting people to and from their houses to jobs. And right now, that ability is just kind of weakened because of our system that exists. And so our hope was to build a better system, to be able to get people where they need to go, to be able to work easier, and to help build communities and strengthen the ones that already are moving in the right direction.
Of course, a devil's advocate in me would say, if you really liked riding the bus and saved that much money, why did you give up after a week? You could have made it a year long.
I didn't give up. I still ride it on occasion. There are times when I just can't because the ability and the headways, right, to be able to get downtown to my meetings that I have around town, it just doesn't work out.
And I guess that's part of the plan here, to increase the frequency and the ability to get through express routes and bus rapid transit routes and any number of elements of this bill. Let me talk about the rail line, because that, if you look at the $1.3 billion initial price tag, that's roughly half, I think, of $600-plus million, dollars, and it got a lot of attention. 22-mile line, 12 stops, I think, by one estimate. The old state, what people would... No, is the Fairtrain line.
Correct.
The old
Street.
Nickel plate line. You know railroads. You work even outside the General Assembly in that industry. Good idea, bad idea? Let's just look at the rail aspect of it.
Well, I think it's an excellent idea. The right-of-way is there, and just the popularity of the state Fairtrain shows that people love riding trains, commuter trains, and it's It's really the way to go about it. And the major bottleneck with traffic is in northeast Marion County, south Hamlin County, and that's where the rail line is. And I think
your district, in other words,
well, yes. Right through my district. when people talk about and learn about the whole system, they're interested in it.
Well, if it makes sense, and from a freight standpoint, your company, right. I think I saw the figure, it's grown 3,400% since its inception 26 years ago. Mm-hmm. And again, this is freight.
Right.
If moving people is such a good idea, why aren't more private companies, I suppose critics would say, stepping forward to do this rather than having it financed through taxpayer dollars?
Well, I think that's the million-dollar question. I think that's why people have not...
$600 million question, maybe. Well, not.
Yeah, that's the billion-dollar question. That is the large question of how you make this financially doable. And I don't believe anybody has come to that conclusion yet, and that's probably one of the reasons why it's not been successful yet. And we haul commodities, there are a lot of smart people out there, and it will come along where somebody comes up with an idea of where, if it doesn't make money, it breaks even, but it's not there yet.
Well, one of my former colleagues, Andrea Neal at the Indianapolis Star, wrote a piece that got a lot of attention, I think, in the past week or so in the Indiana Policy Review, saying that this bill needed to stop, that it was time for a reality check, and that mass transit is an inordinately expensive way to move people. I think she said 72 cents per passenger mile compared with, don't quote me on this, maybe 20 a quarter, say 25, 26 cents for an auto and other, she had other factors. And that we're in big cities where it's much more common, ridership is down, public support is increasing, it's just not working. Do you buy that at all?
Well, I think this is where, again, I'd go back to the study, the economic impact study that the Central Indiana Transit Task Force did. And they approached this from a modality neutral examination, basically. Roads, light rail, rapid bus, even traditional bus, to look at, it's not just the cost factor, it's the return on investment. And I think, to many people's surprise, actually, the expanded bus rapid transit and sort of what I would call a modest light rail system actually outperformed the return on investment that you find from roads. And I want to say it was like 4-1 in many respects. And it's the growth and that you find that occurs along those thoroughfares, not just what it costs to lay the track, to operate it. That's where public-private partnerships can come in, and that's where European countries have actually done it quite successfully. Siemens and others are world leaders in this area in terms of working with the public sector in other countries to actually operate and run the system. That's not anything that we've even really talked about as far as this particular initiative goes, and I know that's something that I think we ought to, let's take this year as we step back and say, you know, here are some other pieces and communicate those to the general public to say, here's what the return on investment actually will be. Here's why this is a better way than trying to build yourself out of congestion, which you never can do. And then I think the other thing, again, and I go back to this from the very beginning, is let's look at that overall plan. And I know that it was scaled back to be more modest. But the truth is, was it inspiring enough for people? Is it time to either go big or go home? And so...
Well, it was a few years ago that some of the task forces or the committees you were involved in, they were talking about light rail even up to Muncie and other communities.
Oh, believe me, Ball State does not want to be left out of this
far
discussion.
Far outside. So is this the notion, go big or go home, Christine Altman?
Part of the problem that we have with public transportation in central Indiana currently is it is a really poor system. And it's no reflection on Indigo. It's no reflection on that board or the leadership at Indigo. It's a reflection of dollars.
Right.
And right now it's a hub and spoke system that literally you have to ride public transportation as a necessity to utilize it. To give you an example.
And there are 7%, I think, of households in Marion County that rely on.
Correct.
On
there is a very large number. I don't have an accurate with me. But as an example, if you lived on West Washington Street and you wanted to work at the pyramids, it would probably take you an hour and a half to get there and back on their schedule, because you have to go to Central, you got to go to the core, which is downtown, and shoot on up on a very low headway schedule. Buses don't come often enough. So to Terry's point, to make an effective system that is worth the investment, you have to invest sufficient dollars.
Well, that's an interesting point. And Mike Bieberstein, when you were doing your Ride Mike or Go Mike Go, you pointed out the research you did suggested that for a city our size, 13th largest city in the country, we spend, I think we rank maybe 100th in terms
99th
of...
99th or 100th.
99th or 100th in terms of support for our bus system. Is that embarrassing for Indianapolis?
It's frustrating, for sure. It doesn't seem to create a system where everyone wants to be able to ride, right? So if you don't prioritize the spending you give to it, the individuals that might normally take it, they don't see the use. So, and you'd commented earlier, talked about some of the benefit. What really struck me was I had a conversation yesterday with two attorneys about my age who talked about the ability they would have to bill another hour and a half just by simply getting on some type of rapid transit to get downtown. So productivity in itself would just increase, I think.
And that's been the loyal ridership with the express bus. I mean, if you have a business or you have an occupation downtown where you can get on the express bus in either Carmel or Fishers, go downtown, and then come back on a limited schedule in the evening, it's been extremely popular. And the elasticity with gas prices have been surprisingly low.
And I think, again, I mean, this is enabling legislation. So... The first hurdle to get over is to try to get at least 51 votes to get it out of the House, because it's a revenue-raising measure, so it's got to originate in the House. But that's where I think we need to take a look at the overall plan and model, and knowing how many legislators are actually in Central Indiana, you're going to fall short. So you've got to find a way to capture additional votes by giving those legislators in other parts of Indiana a reason to see that, hey, this is a model that we could actually use in Allen County, you know, northeastern Indiana. They have a desperate need to improve their transportation system. So creating the sort of legislative model where you can put both local units of government together in partnership with state government and the private sector to do maybe a new thoroughfare, or to do the kinds of upgrades to their existing transportation system, roadways included. This isn't just about bus and rail. We've got to have a good system of roadways to enable people to get to where they need to go on the different modalities.
That may be our discussion for another day, because unfortunately, we've reached our destination in fairly rapid fashion here in this. But something tells me we're going to be talking about this next year, next session, and perhaps you'll all be willing to come back and share your observations and your expertise on this important subject again. I appreciate your being here. Again, my guests have been Republican Senator Jim Merritt of Indianapolis, Democratic Representative Terry Austin of Anderson, Hamilton County Commissioner Christine Altman, Chair of the Central Indiana Regional Transportation Authority, and Mike Bieberstein, Director of Public Policy at the Greater Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce. Smoke 'em if you got 'em, or maybe not. The long smoldering debate over a statewide smoking ban on the next Indiana Lawmakers. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight. What can we read into the fact you don't have an Indiana Transportation Insight? You got education, you got gaming, I guess.
Well, as soon as they pass the law, then there will certainly be the need.
Then you'll have a newsletter. All right. Well, you know, why don't we have a law? This is something that, as I mentioned, has been not necessarily in this shape, but has been proposed in some fashion for a decade or more.
Sure. This is a political issue with a small p. You've got half the legislature saying, well, bring us a plan, a formal plan that shows that you've got consensus. And the other half say, well, wait a minute, you know, we don't want you to present us with a fait accompli. You know, we want to be able to work around certain things, and we want to be able to involve Lake County in this and bring in some of the more rural areas, bring in the rest of the collar counties. And so there's really no consensus as to how this is best approached. And it's going to have to, as the panelists said, percolate a little bit more.
You know, the tax issue, we talked about that during the roundtable, and Grover Norquist in the letter he sent to lawmakers suggesting that this would constitute a tax increase. If that's the benchmark, I mean, can this state ever pursue the kind of large-scale infrastructure improvements that would accompany a project of this sort?
Well, we're finding that we can do it for highways. We found innovative ways. We found just our regular ordinary ways, and we've even kind of found some riffs off the ordinary ways with Garveys, these revenue anticipation bonds, those types of things. And we're building more and more highways. We're also building, with I-69, for example, the extension, and we're building wider highways around Indianapolis with I-69 around Fishers and I-465 improvements. We're talking about an Ileana Expressway. We're finding the money for highways, so we should be able to find the money
again,
for mass transit.
Again, all for trucks and cars, which I think Senator Merritt mentioned, we're a car-loving state. Is that what this is fundamentally?
I think that there's certainly a case to be made for, you know, people feeling a little bit more convenient, feeling a little bit more free to use their cars. But each part of the state has a different kind of culture when it comes to transportation, and that's, again, part of the problem. You've got to have a majority in the General Assembly for this, and then you've got to find a way to get this approved at the local levels.
All right, Ed, thanks. Appreciate your insights. Sign me up for your new transportation newsletter as soon as it hatches. For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis. We're back again next week. Until then, take care.
The idea economy is here at the Purdue Research Park. A powerful economic engine and a technology conduit from Chicago to Louisville. Purdue Research Park, the idea economy is here.